Welcome to what's going to be a fascinating conversation today, and a topic every chief information officer and senior IT manager is paying close attention to. Our panelists today are Tom Cicela, Chief Technology Officer for the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, the Deputy Joint Program Management Office of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Iron Bow Technologies, and Keith Maresca, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and Secure Multi-Level Security. Gentlemen, welcome to the panel. Before we get started, I'd like to set some context to our discussion. Nearly every federal CIO is looking at some form of virtual desktop infrastructure, or VDI. It's becoming as ubiquitous as cloud computing, mobility, and big data discussions. VDI, in many respects, is one step to move toward the cloud, and in other respects, it's its own approach that may or may not include cloud computing as we know it today. Many agencies see VDI has better and more secure approach to mobile computing and telework as well. Others see it as a way to move from that thick client setup that has permeated most organizations over the last 20 years and back toward a thin or even zero client setup for desktop computing. Several studies over the past year have showed that agencies see VDI as a gateway to mobility and as a way to improve cost effectiveness and efficiency in their network. Now, at the same time, the challenges to implementing VDI are pretty typical. Do business applications integrate easily? And of course, security is always a concern. Some say VDI isn't more secure than traditional desktops because it's the endpoint device that causes most of the headaches for security folks. But there are plenty of benefits as well for VDI. According to Gunnar Berger's August 2012 blog post for Gartner, he says VDI is easier to manage because thousands of desktops can run off a single central image. This also means security is improved because you have only to worry about securing that one image. Berger also says VDI improves performance because at the time it takes to get data and how you can access the data from any device at any access point. So we know the risks, we know there's benefits, and like any technology, agencies need to figure out how best to calculate whether those benefits outweighs those risks. And that's where part of the decision comes in of how agencies can figure out the return on investment for VDI. How long will it take? 3 years, 1 year, 2 years? Well, we're going to discuss that today. Most would agree that the cost to implement VDI is about equal to implementing thick clients or your typical desktop PC. But it's the longer-term savings where VDI tends to come out ahead. The question is just how much ahead. You have to understand these things as things as configuration planning, storage costs, and licensing as you figure out your ROI. So with that context in place, let's turn to our panelists. Once again, today our panelists, Tom Cicela, Chief Technology Officer, the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, the Deputy for the Joint Program Management Office for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Iron Bow Technologies, and Keith Maresca, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and SecureView Multi-Level Security. I'm going to turn first to Ryan, Iron Bow Technologies. There's a lot going on around VDI. What are you seeing from your customers?
Yeah, great question. So I appreciate you having me on the show today. So I have the pleasure of working with many agencies out there from the civilian side to the defense side. So I get to kind of see it all out there and what they're sort of doing, what works, what doesn't work. So, really what I'm seeing is, you have agencies out there that are using their classic virtualization infrastructure. And, the question is, do we bring that to the desktop side? How do we leverage that infrastructure to make, our workers out there more efficient, more effective? How do we bring that back, all that data back into the data center on premise, that is, for security? So what I'm seeing is, okay, how do we take that virtual infrastructure that's already in place and move it to the desktop? A lot of decisions that need to be made there. Are there CapEx savings? Are there OpEx savings in there? Is it worth it to go to virtual desktops? So I'm seeing that lately with all the different agencies out there, and they're trying to figure out how do we make this transition? How do we make it easier on the end user so that in the morning they're not coming in, hitting that power button and waiting for something to boot up. They already can get right into their desktop, their approved image, that is, and start working and being effective. Not to mention, how do we do that in the office, but how do we take that on the road? When we're on the road and we're mobile, which most folks are these days, how do we take that on the road so that we can log in securely, get that information that that we need securely, and then go about our normal day and be productive? So I'm seeing the transition from the data center side from the on the virtual side to bring it to the desktop side. But really, I'm seeing, well, how do we get there, right? How do we manage our desktops? How do we make sure they're functioning efficiently and effectively? So that's really what I'm seeing there, is how do we make that transition, but also how do we manage that?
So from what you just described, it seems like a lot of agencies have virtualized their data centers, or at least have moved in the direction to have a certain percentage of virtualization. But now they're saying, okay, what else can we do from there? Is that what you're hearing from your customers?
Yeah, I'm really kind of seeing that across the board, just saying, okay, we have a virtual infrastructure in play, on-prem that is. Now, how do we move that towards the desktop side? Like, how do we make that transition?
All right, let's move over to Tom Sisela from Army Information Technology Agency. You guys seem to have made that transition. Tell us about what you guys are doing.
So we actually started a pilot probably about 18 months or so ago on VDI to kind of work through some of the variables that you talked about earlier. Really, is it going to save us money? Is it going to increase our security? Is it going to make us more effective and more efficient? A lot of times, the private sector will look more at profit and loss, and the government's kind of metric for success, in large part, is the effectiveness and efficiency and whether or not we can provide better services to our customers. So my office is actually leading the modernization innovation for the Pentagon and the Pentagon Reservation and all of our constituent locations. And so we started this pilot a while ago. And it was a bit of a rocky start, to say the least. We intended to do a kind of analysis of alternatives, look at lots of different technologies, but it didn't actually work out that way. Joint Staff approached us probably about a month into the planning stage of our pilot and asked us to press forward with a solution very rapidly to get them to full desktop, virtual desktop capability by the end of calendar year 13. And so that really, we changed our plans. We got a good partner in Joint Staff. General Bowman is an excellent customer. He's very demanding, but he also provided the senior top-level support necessary for us to get there. So we rapidly did a design. We did market surveys, market analysis, talked to a lot of different vendors to find out what the options were. We ultimately ended up choosing a converged platform, brand new sort of virtualized form. There was a Type 1 hypervisor. Typically, you see this in the data centers. We had a traditional, more blade SAN architecture in our data center and still do today. We chose this converted architecture for VDI to save us a little bit of labor costs. And that's what we're seeing right now from the deployment as we moved from the pilot into production. Probably we started the migration in September, so about a year after the pilot started. The pilot actually went IOC in April of 13, and then we went to production in September. So it was a very rapid sort of turnaround, faster than anything I've really seen anything in the Pentagon move, quite frankly. We went from not having anything at all to a full production deployment in less than 18 months, in large part because of the good senior leadership we got from the Joint Staff, as well as a kind of a firm commitment on behalf of the Pentagon. And we did deploy a true multi-tenant environment to the Pentagon. We can add new clients, new customers, new tenants very rapidly. It was one of the first, if not the first, true multi-tenant deployments that we've experienced in the Department of Defense. So that was a unique challenge for us to provide that separation of concerns and separation of duties across our different tenants. And we're working with not only the Department of Army headquarters, but the Marine Corps as well right now to see if they want to join the pilot. And so that's kind of where we started and where we are now today.
And when the Joint Staff says they want it by a certain date, I mean, there's a lot of stars on their shoulders. You do it.
Yes, very much so. General Bowman really set the mark, and I'll be 100% honest with you. That's probably the only reason it moved as quickly as it did. He asked us a number of times to slide things a little bit to the left, I really kind of pushed back on them in some regard. We wanted to do some prudent engineering. We wanted to kind of survey our existing desktop environment and see what the technical parameters were of our existing desktop environment. So we chose to actually put some special software on not only our ITA desktops and laptops as well as a Joint Staff to kind of do a baseline. And so we can compare what it was versus what it is. And that actually gave us some very interesting results. And now we're continuing to collect the metrics and the telemetry from the production deployment. And we're seeing a continual increase of efficiency from an end user perspective, a decrease in login times. Obviously, the patching and the security is significantly better than it is in our current production environment. And we're using that data to actually give it to the Department of Army headquarters, to CIO G6. See if they're interested in moving the Department of Army into the virtual environment as well. So,
Fascinating. I know we'll get more into it. Let's turn to Terry McCall from Defense Intelligence Agency. You guys are part of the lead of the EyeSight program, which I think plays a big role. It's going to use VDI quite a bit. Talk a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Sure. For a DIA, we've used VDI to help actually implement a multi-level security solution, MLS solution. On our MLS front end, we use Raytheon's Trusted Thin Client. On the VDI back end, we use both VMware for the hosting environment, and then Citrix Zen Desktop for the load balancing and for the provisioning. We basically use those technologies to provide services for 18,000 thin clients across two network domains, hosted out of seven locations globally around the world. It's basically the big benefit for us has been in user mobility, the fact that we do have a global customer base, and so this gives a lot of flexibility for customers in terms of whether they're logging in at different thin clients, different buildings, actually different locations around the world. That really represents kind of the legacy MLS solution that we have been implemented. As you mentioned, we're transitioning to the IC Desktop Environment, or ICDTE. The solution there is similar. It's just that our emphasis there is on one network domain versus multiple domains at this point. All the benefits that we see in that are the things that you kind of highlighted in your introduction. The biggest piece for us, obviously, is getting to a single desktop image. We went from 33 desktop images down to one. So that has huge benefits for us in terms of being able to operate and maintain, simplifies the process greatly, and helps us tremendously with our security and keeping of the currency of our patches.
I want to ask about the domains. When you talk about domains, are we talking about classified, unclassified, or are you talking about unclassified but just specific areas of the presentation layer, I guess?
Actually, different security domains. So okay. It would be different classified domains, actually. And the main benefit there to us is, again, using thin clients is we don't have to do multiple thin clients under people's desks where they're doing one thick client for each individual domain, which, again, has huge cost savings for us.
You get rid of that switch, right? Wasn't there a switch or something? I've never seen it, but
get rid of the
I've
switch.
Only been told.
Yes, get rid of the switch on top of your desk, get rid of the portable heaters underneath your desk, all those thick clients that are residing there.
And I think the people enjoy the portable heaters. Let's move to Keith Moresco from Dell. You guys are seeing something else from your clients as well, both in the civilian side and the DoD side. Give me a sense of VDI.
I think the way the trend is going across government is the need to get out of the cycle of, you know, every 3 to 5 years, we're clearing off all these old desktops and laptops and then, you know, having to dispose of them securely because you have all this data resided there. So you have to make sure that you've wiped out disks, you've transferred data. It becomes a major level of effort. We have to simplify that. And going to a virtualized environment not only improves your cybersecurity position, but it also makes that transition a lot easier. Now it's all residing back in the cloud or data center, so data access is much easier. Also, you do have the availability. Now you have some place on your desk that you can actually put your coffee mug because you don't have all this other hardware there by having, you know, one device, be it a zero or a thin client. The additional advantages we're seeing is you also change your power. You know, there's a power savings involved. You go to, you know, some of the wise zero clients we have, we're talking about 7 watts versus maybe 150, 175 watts with a desktop, depending on what you have. So you add that up over a building, it starts equating to savings. So we're seeing this movement to, I need to simplify my environment. I need to have better security. I need to get rid of all these potential Washington, you know, could be on the front page of the Washington Post about, hey, I lost this laptop. Dude, it's all back now behind the firewall. You have control of it. Plus, most importantly to the user experience, people can access their data when and where they need it securely. And that's the key here. And that's what, you know, with our partners like Iron Bow and stuff, Dell brings to the table.
I want to pull on the string a little bit when you talk about the wattage. And I think, you know, 7 watts, 150 watts, people can see the difference just by numbers. But are people, are your clients really looking at that power savings? Because as you know, if you run a company, anything gets caught up in the G&A and overhead. Well, I don't, as an IT person, do I really save money if I use less power? Do I ever see that money? It really goes back to my boss's boss's boss. What are you hearing from clients?
And there are some cases where you do hear that. But again, it depends who you talk to. You go to an installation and you talk to the civil engineer and go, oh, by the way, if you go and take 3,000 computers, take those out and replace it at 7 watts, maybe 15 watts, you're going to see a savings. he or she can go communicate that going, I like this solution because the infrastructure is not going to be taxed as much. And you're going to see that more and more.
All right, Ryan.
Yeah, so just to dovetail on what Keith said, so, you know, in the past, we've on the power consumption, we've seen that, and, you know, sometimes, yeah, it does get buried. But now there's certain modules out there, such as chargeback, right? So now you have certain organizations within an organization that you can use and automate modules like a chargeback module to say, okay, hey, listen, we're using VDI now, and oh, by the way, you know, here's what your power is running right now. And oh, by the way, in six months prior, without using VDI, this is what your power was. So now you can actually really kind of get into the numbers, and you can see that cost savings by using some chargeback modules.
Tom.
So I think power is actually part of a larger soft cost issue with VDI. So we're seeing not only we did compute the power potential power savings if we were to move Department of Army headquarters forward. It's in the $1 million range. It's a non-insignificant savings. However, the biggest cost we're actually seeing is in labor, not only in terms of the amount of time it takes to patch, the amount of time it takes for us to manage our image or the handful of images, but even on the software deployment side, it was really astounding to me the number of people that we have out in the field who all they do all day is go to desktops and install software and fix configuration issues. Our mean time between failure on zero clients is significantly lower than it is on traditional desktops and laptops.
All right. Keith, you got about 30 seconds.
Okay. Two things. You know, one, you'll see a zero client or a thin client. We have those that are out there 10, 12 years versus, you know, you rarely see a laptop or a desktop that lasts that long. The other piece you have is if you change and modernize your back-end infrastructure, like with our 12G servers, fresh air cooling, you reduce those costs, so you even have savings back in the data center. So there's savings to be had all around. And lastly, when you have an individual and their desktop croaks and they sit there for hours waiting for the IT guy to show up versus swap out with a few cables, the thin client, and they're back up where they left off. Tremendous savings right there in manpower.
Huge opportunity cost. Now, Terry, I know you wanted to say something, but we're going to take a quick break. Then we come back, we'll pick back up. You're listening to the panel discussion, Transformative Technology, Desktop Virtualization in Government, sponsored by Dell and Ironbone Technologies on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
With rising cybersecurity threats, as well as an increasingly mobile and future-ready workforce, desktop virtualization makes sense, right? So what is stopping your organization from making the move? If costs and organizational roadblocks come to mind, you are not alone. Let the desktop virtualization experts from Dell and Ironbow Technologies help you overcome these barriers to adoption. Put the power of desktop virtualization in the hands of your users. Visit ironbow.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to the panel discussion, Transformative Technology, Desktop Virtualization in Government, sponsored by Dell and Ironbow Technologies on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm your moderator, Jason Miller. Our panelists today are Tom Cicela, the Chief Technology Officer for the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, the Deputy of the Joint Program Management Office for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Ironbow Technologies, and Keith Moreska, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and SecureView Multi-Level Security. Gentlemen, before break, we're talking at the very end there about soft costs, the idea of not just power, but also labor. Terry, you were about to jump out your seat there to talk about some of the labor and the soft costs. Pick it up from there. What are you guys seeing as you guys have moved to VDI from a savings standpoint when it comes to soft costs?
Sure. Well, Tom had talked about how he was surprised how many people were out just going to desktops installing software. So I kind of wanted to piggyback on that, because when we look at where the savings is for us, again, a huge chunk of our cost is in labor. So this helps us tremendously when it comes to tier two or desk side support. Obviously, with a thin client offering to customers, there's a lot less things to go wrong at the endpoint, so we can do a lot more remote administration in support of that customer. There's also the benefit of not losing production time and not having any downtime, as was mentioned earlier. Again, if a customer does have an issue, if there's a patch that's caused a problem or something, they don't have to wait for an IT person to go fix that problem. They can go to another workstation. Again, I mentioned we focus on user mobility, so they could go to a different building if they had to in order to log in and get their session back up, because every time they're logging in, they're getting that clean, gold, pristine image. And so the emphasis for us is on the labor savings that we get. That's been very useful for us, particularly in budgetary constraints and challenging times that we have right now. So that's been a huge benefit.
Let me ask you for two definitions. The first one is when you talk about zero thin client, you're talking about a keyboard, a screen, and a mouse, basically.
Correct.
And then a plug that goes into the wall.
Correct.
Well,
yep.
We'll simplify it. And then the other thing I want to make sure we know, when you talk about savings and labor savings, do you have a percentage yet? Is it too early? Can you give us any kind of quantify how much savings we're talking about?
Not really. It's too early. I mean, I think the biggest benefit for us is that as we've had some budget considerations and budget challenges with decreasing budgets, it's really been a way for us to provide services to customers to continue to meet their expectations and to do so in light of those physical challenges. So it's a way of showing that we're responding to our customers and to their requirements and finding better, cheaper ways to do things.
Let me turn to Keith or Ryan here. When you guys talk to your clients, is there a savings percentage that you're seeing when you talk about labor costs or just the move to VDI? Ryan? Put them on the spot.
Yeah, great, thank you. So, in terms of cost savings and kind of quantifying that, everyone's different, right? Every agency is different out there. Everyone has their mark, right, or their threshold as to which, they're going to quantify savings and say, hey, this is some hard numbers in the sand right here. So, it's tough since VDI is still somewhat new out there to say, hey, listen, I'm seeing, a 38% reduction in overall manpower, right, on what it takes to roll out, typical desktops versus VDI. So, I really think when I work with different agencies out there, we have a baseline, we have a midpoint, say a year or so or 2 years into it and, further out, right? So, but I really think it takes a good number of years, and that can mean different things to different agencies out there to really quantify that. But that's the hardest part. The hardest part is to actually get the numbers, the real numbers out there to say, yeah, we're seeing savings here. We immediately see it on the manpower. There's no question there. There's no question that, instead of rolling out your classic desktop and taking 6-7 hours to do that, right, we can roll out a secure, approved image in a matter of actually seconds, really. So there's no question on the manpower, but, it does take time to kind of look at the soft costs, right, and really put a number behind that. It just takes time to quantify that and measure that. And that's where we have tools and partners like Dell, one of our great partners there, to help measure that as an agency grows.
All right. Tom?
On that point, we've actually done a little bit of math on this, and we have direct experience or knowledge right now. So what we're seeing on our desktop support contract side as well as our data center side, we're seeing an overall decrease in the number of people it takes to administer the environment. So we actually saw effectively what we're we have about 6 people managing our environment today from the VDI perspective, and it's equivalent to about 120 blades. It's actually 36 blocks of a specific type of compute capability. And if you compare that to our existing density right now, where our it takes about, in our current environment, we have about 500 or so workloads, physical workloads in our environment, one of our high density computing environments, and we have about 20 or 30 people managing those. The 6 people managing the entire VDI infrastructure versus about 20 or 30 managing just the physical compute infrastructure, an additional 20 or 30 people managing storage, and then we have an additional 10 or 15 people managing the network. So we're seeing a significant decrease in the number of people required. However, I just want to be clear that we're not we're talking in terms of cost savings. We're actually approaching this much more in terms of a cost avoidance. So we are taking that money and reinvesting it in other areas, right? So the money that we see maybe not needing as many system administrators is now we take those resources and we apply them to maybe, virtualization of the application or virtualization of the network, which is emerging right now, and storage virtualization and better data management, better enterprise data lifecycle management and other things like this. So there is a little bit of cost savings. The direct cost savings, which is the decrease in the hardware and the software costs, right, is kind of straightforward. We kind of, those are characterized as direct savings, but the labor savings is more of a cost avoidance. And it does take the government longer with our contracts and whatever. We saw the crossover point is about 3 years for us. where we start seeing the ability to affect contracts and the ability to decrease the amount of time it takes for us to get out there and then manipulate our acquisition environment. So for HQDA, for example, we think it's going to be in about a three-year window from when we're going to see the crossover to see actual bona fide savings.
And I know we talk a lot about cost savings, but I agree with you. Most of the time when you talk to government folks and industry, it's all about cost avoidance and moving those resources, as you guys did, from point A to point B. Let's talk about now how to get there. Now, we've talked a lot about what the benefits are and whether it's soft costs or hard costs, but a lot of agencies, and I think, Ryan, let me start with you, because a lot of the things you've talked about was a lot of agencies, your customers have gotten to virtualization from a data center perspective, but how do they get to the VDI? So what are the first initial steps that they should be thinking about to move in that VDI direction?
Yeah, so a great question again. So, you know, really when you have your initial baseline there, and you have your architecture on the server side, on the data center side, moving over to the desktop side, you know, it's not the technology. The technology is there. It does work. But the way we Ironbow goes about looking at a virtual desktop infrastructure is understanding the business side of the house. So there's that other piece to the puzzle that certain folks don't really kind of realize. They look at the technology and they study the technology and they want to see how it works and hot ports and cold ports and, you know, thin clients and zero clients. What should we do here? But really the key is understanding your users and what they're doing, what they need, understanding the business side of the house. If you can say, hey, I understand how this agency rolls out typical physical desktops today and somewhat mimic that. Granted, there's certain changes that have to take place, but somewhat mimic that and onto the virtual side, you know, you'll be successful. So so my advice out there would be understand the business side of the house. Really kind of get entrenched with the different organizations, the different groups on there, the different clientele, what they're expecting, what they're not expecting, and understand how to roll out those virtual desktops. And then, of course, you know, take it one step after that. After you understand that side of the house, well, then how do you manage them? So that would be kind of my advice out there is, you know, how do you take it from the back-end data side to the virtual desktop side? And that's really kind of comes with understanding the business side of the house, which is important.
All right, Keith?
There's several steps that I think are critical in this journey. As you're attempting to go to a virtualized desktop environment. One is you need to firmly understand everyone's requirements, not just the IT administrator, but also the end users. Two is important to also do an assessment of your environment. Too often we find that the perception and the reality are vastly different. And, you know, there are people who say, oh, I use this all the time. And when you do the assessment, you find out all the times, you know, 10 minutes every other week. So you have to get past those things. The next aspect is the Me Too requirements. You know, we see right now a lot of things with, you know, virtualization, 3D graphics, and their requirements. People go, oh, I need that. Well, that's a costly investment. Not everyone needs that to go watch YouTube, okay? You need it for the business. So doing that assessment is critical and getting those requirements. And defining what, you know, your end state is that you want to get to. What is that happy medium between the IT administrators and the end users? Because, you know, you're going to have to find the happy medium because, you know, remember, the secure environment is one that no one ever uses. You know, there's that terrible dichotomy there that you have to fight through. So do that assessment. Nail down those requirements.
Let me turn to Terry for a second. When you guys started to go down the path of VDI, how many of those steps did you follow? Or should have Keith called you earlier and told you the steps a few years ago?
That might have helped. I think it really comes down to, like he said, understanding your customer and their business and understanding what's important to your customer. Again, as IT professionals, that's probably one of the biggest challenges we have is because, again, we think everything has an IT solution, and we really don't think of it from the perspective or the lens of our customers. So what is it that's important to them when it comes to the service that you're providing? For us, obviously, we captured lessons learned as we did numerous iterations of providing thin client solutions to our customers. But the big piece of it for us, I think, was a consistent user experience, a consistent customer experience, and also understanding we have a very global workforce. So it's a matter of being able to provide that consistent experience to customers regardless of where they're sitting. And again, a user workforce, a customer workforce that's very mobile, moves around quite a bit. And then making sure that, again, it's the expectation is, you know, no downtime. I need to be able to access the applications that I need. I need to be able to do the work that I have to do. And if there's a problem and there's some sort of issue and I can't get access to my applications and my data, I need to be able to go somewhere else immediately and log on and get that access.
Now, do you guys have any kind of customer governance council or user group? How are you guys dealing with that?
So we have a very strong governance structure in place in which part of that, there's numerous levels of it, but part of that is where we do bring the stakeholders at the table. We essentially have a round table where we look at things such as applications rationalization. We look at all the applications that we have in the enterprise. We bring them to the table and we say, okay, what is it that's really important to you? And again, look at it from a requirements perspective, understanding they have applications today, but what is it that they need for the future, and making sure that what we're providing today is able to grow in that direction, or do we need to make some major adjustments and shifts?
Let me shift to Tom from the Army Information Technology Agency. When you guys were working with the joint staff to get their pilot going, and they kept saying now, how did you bring to their attention, hey, how many apps do you have? Can we only can rationalize so many. What was the process?
So we actually had an entire team of folks. It was called our stakeholder engagement team that was responsible for two things: not only communication with the customers and the people that are going to be participating in the pilot and the ultimate rollout, but also responsible for gathering their input. And so we did have an advantage that Hampton Roads, what is now Joint Staff South, used to be JFCOM, had already virtualized. They've done the VDI, and they've already virtualized a large percentage of applications. They had about 83 applications that were already virtualized. So they had some really good data that we leveraged there as well. But one thing that we were able to settle upon, which is, as IT guys, we generally don't necessarily think this way, but we were able to actually create tiers of users inside the environment, what we call the kind of casual user, the power user, and then the extreme power user. And something that we realized after we went into the pilot, this was a lesson learned from the pilot that we applied to production, is the vast preponderance of our system administrators are actually power users. They are doing things that the casual users are not doing. And the people that claim to be power users generally are not taking up that much compute resources. We did see, as was mentioned earlier about the graphics processing, we did an analysis, and none of the pilot users needed 3D acceleration. But we knew through experience and through some of the telemetry that we were gathering that there are users out that need it. Specifically, in the DoD land, I speak in terms of the mission space, right, is really where the mission is being done, as opposed to the back office or the business administration or even the IT side are considering enablers to the mission, right? So a lot of the mission guys are out there using extremely high-end applications, especially in the geospatial arena. A lot of the planning and targeting take up a significant amount of resources. So we did actually set aside, and we bought additional type of hardware that had graphic accelerators built into them, so that we can accelerate them. And then we do have, what we notionally call the really, really long monitor cable for the users that really need the power. We will dedicate an actual physical piece of hardware to them, and then, tunnel that monitor cable over our network as a kind of a remote location. So that's an interesting capability that I actually got the idea from Iron Bow and and VMware as well. So,
Keith.
Yeah, I think it's also important to remember, and Tom brings up a great point, maybe not everyone is a candidate to be virtualized. And you need to, if someone come in and say, we're going to virtualize 100%, is setting themselves up probably for disappointment. There is, probably no several standard deviations, 20 to 80% can be virtualized. And also, maybe not for everyone will a zero client or thin client work. You may need that power of compute closer to that user, especially in a high graphics intense environment. So you may need something like a precision workstation. So something different than just a thin client. But again, the requirements will help you define who those users are, so you're not sitting there and wasting money needlessly.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. There's plenty more to talk about. You're listening to the panel discussion, Transformative Technology, Desktop Virtualization in Government, sponsored by Dell and Iron Bow Technologies on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm your moderator, Jason Miller. Our guests today are Tom Cicela, Chief Technology Officer for the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, Deputy in the Joint Program Management Office for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Iron Bow Technologies, and Keith Moreska, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and SecureView Multi-Level Security. We'll be right back.
With rising cybersecurity threats, as well as an increasingly mobile and future-ready workforce, desktop virtualization makes sense, right? So what is stopping your organization from making the move? If costs and organizational roadblocks come to mind, you are not alone. Let the desktop virtualization experts from Dell and Iron Bow Technologies help you overcome these barriers to adoption. Put the power of desktop virtualization in the hands of your users. Visit ironbow.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to the panel discussion, Transformative Technology, Desktop Virtualization in Government, sponsored by Dell and Iron Bow Technologies on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, your moderator. Our panelists today are Tom Cicela, Chief Technology Officer for the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, the Deputy in the Joint Program Management Office for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Iron Bow Technologies, and Keith Maresca, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and Secure Multi-Level Security. Now, gentlemen, before a break, Keith, you ended on a really interesting note. You talked about maybe not everyone gets VDI. And I think that's interesting because you hear about something like VDI and thin client, and why not me? It's very similar, I guess, to mobile devices. We're going to define mobility in a second, Ryan. But mobile devices where everyone thought they should get one. Well, I'm important. I should get one. So, Tom, you guys actually at the Army Information Technology Agency decided not everyone's going to get VDI. Talk a little bit about that decision.
Right. Actually, as part of our requirements analysis process, we kind of went out and looked at a broad swath of our users and our customers, and we actually established an 80% threshold, and that was more or less given to us by the Joint Staff. We established a similar threshold for the Department of Army Headquarters. And so what we did is we said, well, 80% of the folks in the environment are really targeted to migrate to VDI, and so we had to what we call stratify our customer base, and we created high, medium, and low users. But the 80% for us are really our typical office users, the folks that don't have a very strong mobility requirement. We have two classes of users in the Pentagon that are very important to us. We have our command and control users, our C2 users, which very little downtime is the requirement. And we also have a large swath of folks that sit in the E-ring and the executives in the Pentagon that really need an occasionally connected type technology. And so they do not have the ability to be on the network at all the times. And so zero clients and VDI is really only effective if you have good, high quality, low latency bandwidth back to the server rooms. You can do it for a limited period of time, kind of in a narrow band situation. But we really have an offline requirement for a lot of our users, as well as 100% uptime for some of our users. It's really, burgeoning on 7.9s, frankly. So we kind of put them in the last 20% bucket, if you will, and the old adage that the last 20% takes 80% of the time. So that's kind of what we said, is we think we can do the quick 80% very rapidly, and we did. And so from the point that we actually started production deployment, we think it's really only going to take about 6 months to roll out 80% of Joint Staff, which is about 2,000 users on Nipper and 2,000 users on Zipper. It's the same 2,000 users, just different networks, right? And so we are investigating the MLS solution that Terry mentioned earlier to try and decrease the number of end devices that we need as well. And then we're struggling with right now, how do we address users that are not in the Pentagon or on the MAN that have limited bandwidth, as well as folks who bona fidely need to be offline for a while. And so those technologies exist and they're emerging. They're not quite fully baked in our experience so far. So that's what we're looking at right now.
So this leads to the discussion on mobility as well. So I'm going to turn to Ryan from Iron Bow first to define mobility, because I know we had an interesting conversation previously about what is mobility. So Ryan, define it for us.
Yeah, so I think in this context for today, we're looking at a mobile user tying back to a virtual image, right? A virtual desktop image. So I know that mobility is a hot topic, and when we think of mobile, we usually think tablets, cell phones, and whatnot. So let's if we can, let's just sort of table that for now and just talk about how it relates to the virtual desktop image.
But this could be, so just to be clear, it could be anybody who is tying back to that VDI. So whether I'm from a desktop or a laptop or smartphone or whatever.
Correct. So anyone in the world at any place at any time, whether they're at a hotel or at home, in the office, or in a different building within, you know, on campus. So, you know, that's how I would sort of look at that mobile user tying back into or logging on to a virtual desktop into an image now.
And when we talk mobility, obviously security is a big deal too. Let me turn to Terry from DIA for a second. You guys have people around the world. You made that comment earlier. How is mobility fitting in with your idea of VDI?
Well, it gets back to having that one common gold image and making sure there's a consistent user experience regardless of where they log in. Again, different workstations, different buildings are around the globe. I think what's important for us in terms of user mobility is it gets to the direction that we're headed with the IC desktop environment. Because I, you know, in our, within our legacy environments, we've always had some mobility within an agency, across organizations, or in different buildings within a particular region. But now with IC desktop environment, we have that mobility across the entire Intel community. So as we roll out IC DTE, what it basically does is open up the world to where, again, if I'm as a DI employee at an NGA facility, I can now go to a workstation, log in on my DTE account, and get my image, get all my applications, access to all my data. And that really is a huge driver when it comes to the goals of you know, having more integrated intelligence, more information sharing, and also enhancing the security of that delivery, as we've referred to earlier.
What's the difference then between a VDI, for instance, and a VPN, a virtual private network? Because right now, for instance, you can log on, a lot of people log on through a VPN and they get their data and they get their network. They may not get their image though. Is it less secure? Is it more secure? Is it just a better way of security?
It's a better way. It's more centralized control is what I would say, because with the common image through VDI, the important thing for us is configuration control, and it's making sure that we can enhance security. And it gets back to making sure that, again, we're up to date with our patches, that as we identify security threats, that we're able to more quickly respond to those. And you don't have multiple images. You don't have, you know, endpoints that you're trying to physically go out and patch. So there's that. There's also the fact that within the thin client environment, you have more control over that end user device. Big thing for us, obviously, is USB port policy. So we're able to centrally execute that policy across an entire enterprise, which obviously addresses any security threats.
Let me turn to Tom.
Yeah, so we have SSL VPN right now for our solution, and what we're seeing with VDI is we can give the users their complete environment, their complete experience, and control it kind of down to the desktop level. But more importantly is when you SSL or you VPN in any form, whether it's SSL VPN or otherwise, is you're taking that data and you're removing it from the place that it exists and you're putting it on the remote location. And so if I VPN in from home, from my home computer, for example, that data is going to reside on my home computer. And that's a problem for us. And so VDI does allow us to pull all that data back into the data center, and effectively what, you know, I say is it shows a snapshot of the data via the screen. And if that data is captured in some manner, if it's not encrypted properly or whatever, you're really only seeing screenshots. You don't actually have access to the data. So the data loss protection is very high in that regard. And to that effect, even within the Pentagon, we went a step further and we created a completely untrusted zone out in the building itself. What we have right now with hot ports is you have your Windows domain is extended out to the port. And if anyone were to plug into that port, effectively you get an IP address and have access to the domain controller and other things. You might not be able to authenticate and get access to the data, but you still have the ability to potentially penetrate the network that way. In our new environment, it's a completely untrusted zone. You have to jump through not only a security server, but a connection server. And even then, once you get to the connection server, the only thing you get are screen images. So it's very much more layered. It's a lot easier to control. And we did, we CAC enabled the environment. So we have two-factor authentication, which is a much stronger form of authentication than just basic user ID and password. And so we are working right now to actually create a set of security servers that face the outside, effectively the public internet, so that you can do the same thing from anywhere, at any time, any location. And that's really the goal, to support mobility from our perspective. You still require some sort of network connectivity. So if you have the disconnected requirement, then we're still trying to solve that. But we think that we can increase the 80%, maybe up to 90-95%, something like that.
And I know the CAC enablement, the you know, PIV card, the HSPD-12 card, that is a tough road for a lot of agencies. And I know DoD has been going through, okay, what works best? The NIST just put out the new publication around the derived credential. That could be a whole show in itself. But let me turn forward to Keith, you talked a little bit as well about the mobility issue and security and two-factor authentication. Are more and more agencies, from what you're seeing, your customers asking for that piece?
Yes, it's a critical aspect of mobility is because as they start to embrace mobility and people to be able to access their data and their applications anywhere, anytime, is it in a secure fashion? From our tablets with built-in CAC and fingerprint readers and having those capabilities in there, plus be able to have the cybersecurity with Suite B and having those capabilities to tunnel back securely on multiple networks, and also to have the management software like, say, Absence, which is geographically aware of where you're at. Because, the individual may have access to the data and the apps, but do you want them having access to that data and apps in those locations? So if you know they're in the metro, no, you can't do these things. But if you're on the third floor of, the home office, that's fine, And so you have to have those capabilities. So this all becomes very critical to making sure that you have a secure mobile VDI environment.
Or if you're in China, you may not want to access.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. That's a guess. I don't really know. Let's talk a little bit about workforce issues, because one of the things that we were talking about earlier was the idea of user experience. At the same time, you also have a group of technology people who are used to working on the system, securing the system, dealing with data centers and servers and desktops in a whole different way. When you guys, let me turn to Terry at DIA, when you guys moved into VDI, what did that do to your IT workforce? And at the same time, how did that IT workforce change in terms of the skills they needed?
Well, certainly going this direction is a change to the skill sets needed within your IT support workforce. So for us, in terms of the administrators who, were used to traditionally a server or back-end infrastructure, now they have to be aware of a lot more of different considerations when it comes to troubleshooting, when it comes to supporting the customer, and be aware of customer endpoints, be more aware of applications. So it's a matter of them being more versatile in their knowledge and understanding what the issues are whenever problems arise. There's also, I think, a huge skill set shift when it comes to help desk personnel, because as they're going through the troubleshooting process, now instead of looking at traditional thick, thin environment, now, again, the aperture sort of opens up in terms of what the possibilities are when they're troubleshooting. Is it the thin client? Is it the application? Is it a network issue? Is it a storage device or something else? So that is a totally different skill set and mindset that's required, and it also means different processes for how you go about doing that troubleshooting. So it's not just a technical change. I think it's a cultural change and certainly something that you have to be aware of when you're looking at the skill sets that you need moving forward.
What did you guys do to make sure that those systems administrators, those help desk people, were trained up? Because, again, this is not something that you turn on a switch and you have 6 months to wait for it. Sometimes I think it's probably a snowball in terms of it's a rolling effect.
Certainly training is a huge piece of that, making sure that you have folks that are on board that don't have those skill sets, make sure that they get the training that they need in order to do their duties. I would also say in terms of from a government perspective versus contractor perspective, on the government side, obviously, it's a huge investment in training. On the contractor side, maybe we're able to shift out skill sets more quickly. That helps us to be able to adjust and support those new technologies. So that's always been an advantage for us.
Tom, did you guys have a very similar experience with help desk, or did you actually just end up maybe even just bringing in a contractor?
So we did actually, and we had we were fortunate enough when we started the pilot. It started relatively innocuously, and it really did snowball. But we had a good team that we built not only on the contractor side but on the government side. And the key thing is we started engaging with all of our stakeholders early, not only the customers but the help desk personnel. And we actually spent many hours training tier one, tier two, and tier three for lots of reasons. Our tier one help desk never had an experience with any sort of VDI solution because we are 100% traditional deployments right now. But we also had this handoff that we had to see between IT and the joint staff. And so if the trouble problem was not a zero client, was not was not something that could be fixed by remoting into the virtual desktop, and it was something that was out in the ether like a broken CAC reader or a monitor cable gone bad or something like this, that's where ITA had to kind of transfer the call, do what we do is a hot handoff between us and joint staff so that they can send their tier two people out. But we really saw a lot of training issues on the user side as well. You know, CAC logging into VDI is a completely different user experience than their current traditional environment right now. And a lot of folks just kind of looked at the little box, which is a quarter of the size of the desktop, and kind of tilted their head and squinted their eyes, and I'm not sure what that is anymore. It was an interesting experience for us to try and kind of piece all those together from a stakeholder management perspective.
Huge change management issue, which leads us to our final question of the day, the lightning round, if you will. We've talked a lot about different parts of VDI, why it's important, benefits, changes that need to happen. So let's talk about, if you're an agency who's just going down this path of VDI, what are your two takeaways? Let me turn to Ryan from Iron Bow.
So I would emphasize that there is many different ways to skin this cat, right? There's not one set way. Understand the infrastructure from the back end side to the middle portion of the management, the operations side, right on down to the end user. So the most important thing is there are many different technologies out there. Utilize them for what works best for your agency or your customers. But remember, in the end, it's the user, the end user that matters. If you're not giving them the UX or the experience that they need, they're going to obviously push back, and you'll probably not roll out virtual desktops anymore. So make sure that from the back end to the front side, that there's a lot of options out there. Do your due diligence, and your end users will be happy, and therefore you'll move forward.
All right, Keith, you get the last word. Give me your two quick takeaways.
Assess your environment. And again, that user experience, like Ryan said, is critical. And don't expect that you're going to have immediate savings. But over the long run, 3 to 5 years, this is going to be far better for your environment, and you'll be happy you did it.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to the Dell and Iron Bow Technologies panel on transformative technology, desktop virtualization, and government on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm your moderator, Jason Miller. Our guests today were Tom Cicela, the Chief Technology Officer for the Army Information Technology Agency, Terry McCaw, Deputy in the Joint Program Management Office for the Defense Intelligence Agency, Ryan Sobel, the Director of Enterprise Mobility Solutions for Iron Bow Technologies, and Keith Moreska, the Senior Sales Manager for Dell Federal Cloud Client Computing and SecureView Multilevel Security. If you missed any portion of the show, you can listen to the show its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com, keyword Dell.
With rising cybersecurity threats, as well as an increasingly mobile and future-ready workforce, desktop virtualization makes sense, right? So what is stopping your organization from making the move? If costs and organizational roadblocks come to mind, you are not alone. Let the desktop virtualization experts from Dell and Iron Bow Technologies help you overcome these barriers to adoption. Put the power of desktop virtualization in the hands of your users. Visit ironbow.com to learn more.